Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And what an exciting day. While you're hearing this great, wonderful show, we will both be at the National Campus and Community Radio Conference, which is pretty darn exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited by it.
Yeah.
Are you excited about it?
Probably.
You seem undecided on the excitement level.
Well, it's hard to excite me these days. You know, you get battle scarred and you know, life weary and it gets harder to excite you. I'll probably be fine when I'm there. I'll probably be delighted.
If you want to help get Sebastian excited in Toronto, he's having trouble getting himself excited.
Actually, do you know why I am excited? Why? Because Toronto has two dim sum restaurants with gluten-free Ooh. Options.
Oh, really?
And I am eating dim sum while we're in Toronto.
That's pretty.
That is, pretty and you're welcome to invite me because I know there's like one day that you're going to be less busy.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to be busy every one of the days. actually, so for our listeners, I think what's going to be pretty interesting is Homoground, which is one of the top LGBT podcasts there is.
Like in the world?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whenever you look at lists of top LGBT podcasts, they're often in the top 10.
Ooh.
We are flying them into Toronto.
Okay.
I think they're both in New York at the moment.
Well, we're paying for a plane ticket. It's not like you and I
Like piloting the plane? No.
Or that we're like flying beasts and they're going to mount us.
Yeah.
As we, you know, like a luck dragon.
Your mind is somewhere.
I just went excited. Full never-ending story.
Get mounted. It's a whole thing. All right. Well, anyway, I mention it because Homoground will be coming to the conference in Toronto, and we will be having a conversation with them, an intimate evening with Homoground, taking place June the 5th in the afternoon. Oh, the 4th. I forget which one.
I think it's the 5th at 7?
6 to 7?
Something anyway, like that.
By the time you're hearing it, it's already probably happened. But it's exciting for us because you will be one of the special guests.
Ooh.
As the co-founder and co-host of Can Queer.
Wait. Am I going to get interviewed?
Well, no. So during this panel, which our audience will hear segments of the week after this, because we'd be recording.
Because I'm so used to being the one interviewing people. I can't.
I know.
Like, in the past, people have tried interviewing me, and I just end up interviewing them. And it's a bad habit that's really hard to break.
Wait. So I'm moderating the conversation.
Okay.
So I'll be able to ask you questions. And so our listeners will get a sense of what inspires or what drives, you know, people to create these podcasts and sort of what work goes into it.
Okay.
You know, we do a weekly radio show, which is a grind. Oh, my days.
It can be,
It is.
But, you know, if we didn't do this, the gremlins would get us. It was an agreement that if we did the podcast, the gremlins would stop breaking our stuff.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure everybody, it's just gremlins, right? That's why everyone does it. It's just the gremlins.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be
we just don't get them wet. That's the big thing.
Or feed them after midnight.
Absolutely. We're ready to deal with the gremlins. But no, so the whole point is we'll be talking to Homoground. Lynn Casper will be speaking to us. In addition, we have Kerry Sage, the host of In Rainbows, coming out from the Victoria in Vancouver Island.
Okay.
Will also be one of the special guests. And you, as the co-founder and co-host of Can Queer, and I'll be moderating the panel. So it'll be really cool conversation. We will try and get our regular long-time listeners will know that every June-ish, you know, whenever I go to a national conference, we do a special episode with LGBT broadcasters from across the country.
Right, yeah.
So it's typically Katie Sage has been there a few times. There's myself and a few others.
And this year, for once, it's within my budget to actually join you.
Yeah, you're actually going to be there for like the first time ever, which is pretty exciting. So I'm hoping we can also record a special episode with broadcasters who do similar to what we're doing from all across Canada, and have a really interesting conversation about that. It'll be episode 220, maybe 120. It's, I don't know.
Something like that.
We're really getting high up there.
Yeah, or 119, or I don't know. Something around there.
118 now.
118?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not so a prime number.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why that popped in there to mention that.
It's just one of those things.
You know, somewhere out there, there's someone who's like, thank you. Thank you for mentioning the numeracy of that.
The lack of primacy of that particular number. All right. So I wanted to start. Is there anything that you're looking forward to at this the conversation that's going to happen? Or should we shuffle on?
Other than gluten-free dim sum.
You may have mentioned.
Yeah, I'm really excited about gluten-free dim sum. But yeah, for the conference itself, most conferences, the gold of the event is meeting other people, making connections, hearing other people's stories, getting inspiration, seeing what they're doing differently. Sometimes you have a weird feeling that you need to update or progress something you're doing, but you can't put your finger on what it is. And then you hear somebody else talking and you're like, that's what it is. Maybe not necessarily copy them directly, but they can inspire you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, mostly, and part of the reason why I don't feel excited yet is because I don't know what I'm excited for until I hear it. And then I'll be like, that is why I'm here. Yeah. So it's, you don't know what you don't know until you hear it kind of thing. And that's why I'm sort of just I'm in suspense.
Well,
I'm in the first half hour of a Shyamalan movie is where I am right now, where you're sitting there going like, oh, this is going to be another garbage one, isn't it? And then something happens. You're like, ooh.
So if you think
Shyamalan, not conferences,
if you can
garbage,
if you can think of something to that we should take on board to maybe invigorate or improve or rejuvenate our show. We've been going on for a little bit of a while now. Any ideas? Let us know at Talk Can Queer. You can find us on the Book of Faces and on the Twitter as well, if you wanted to tweet at us.
Twitter.
Yes, exactly. You can tweet at us, or you can find us on the Book of Faces, Talk Can Queer or Can Queer, and you can always reach us at canqueer.news. Right. First up, story. You are a little bit taller than me.
Yes.
Is this true?
Yes, I am a fair deal taller than you.
This is an accurate assessment of where we are. My partner, Jake, is
quite a bit shorter.
He is, I mean, we make him sound like a gremlin. He's not like that short. He is 5'7",
I've seen him eat after midnight,
I think.
So I am positive that he's not.
I've seen him get wet as well, so I think I'm also also evidenced that he's not a gremlin. But he is shorter than me, and he walks like he's got places to be.
Yeah, he boots it for sure. Yeah.
He's like, and if you're in his way, you ain't better be you better not be in his way. Mm-hmm. You also, I can't tell if you're walking like you got places to be, or if you're just tall and that's just like the default tall walk.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
So the reason why I bring this up is the University of Leicester submitted a report in the Science magazine that found that people who are who walk slower have a lower average lifespan.
Yes.
So this isn't to say, and this is sort of where a lot of the media, I think, has got it wrong, that a lot of them are saying fast walkers will extend your life. That's not what the science says.
Yeah.
The science says that if you are a slower walker, your life is typically on average
shorter.
It
sounds like a logical extension. If you walk slow, you're predicted to have a shorter life. Therefore, if you walk fast, you're predicted to have a longer life. But that's actually because you could walk like average speed. You could jog everywhere. It's just, and the other thing is the direction of causality is still poorly understood. So does slow walking predict a short life, or is a short life more of a predictor of slow walking? Or is there some third cause that we don't know yet? That's like, we don't know what the actual nature of it is. There's a few things like people who walk more slowly, if they're walking slowly because they have, you know, aches and pains and things like that, obviously that might be a predictor of a slower life. It could be that they have some kind of a metabolic or energy or hormonal imbalance or something like that that allows them to deploy energy less efficiently, so that walking quickly exhausts them more. And, you know, that's a predictor of organ, blah, blah, blah. Like there's all sorts of directions we could go. Yeah. We don't know what the causality is. It's just slow and short go together.
But what's really interesting about this one is if you are a skinny, slow person, a average build slow person, or a larger slow person, the fact that you are slower is consistently linked to a shorter lifespan.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter your waist circumference, your weight. It's sort of, you know, as they sort of scaled up the human who's walking slow and scaled up the human who is walking fast, that pattern was consistently there. So it doesn't matter what you look like, if you're walking slow.
Well, I mean, you're kind of referencing the BMI, and it was like 10 years ago, I think, where a lot of researchers sort of looked at the BMI and sort of realized that it was kind of a poor predictor because, like, what did they find? They found the underweight group was a stronger prediction of poor health than the overweight group. The high-end average, low-end overweight has the best health outcomes. So they're talking about just shifting the entire BMI up a little bit so that, because like having a little bit of body fat is actually really good for you, makes you resist diseases more and things like that. But then they actually found that no, it's you have to chart this versus that. And they actually found that if the circumference of your weight is less than half your height, then that's the best.
And then you carry the one.
Yeah, and it's just, and there's,
you divide by the sword of Gimli.
So much going on. And then you throw on top of that stuff like the keto diet can cause some people to lose weight and can cause other people to have irreparable liver damage. And then you have doctors going, oh, look, biology, everyone's a little bit different and you can't make one solution for everyone. It's a mess.
This is quite an authoritative study.
Yes.
They spoke with, or they used the data set of 474,909 people 19. In the UK.
I can read. It says 19.
Yeah. So, you know, just shy of 500,000 people.
Yeah.
As the baseline. And what they found
and
was...
In studies, that's like about 20 times larger than most health studies. That's a lot of participants.
You know, we see news stories being like, you know, HIV cured, and it's a study of 7 people. And we're like, really?
Like, it's not. 2,000, if you're talking about health, 2,000 is sort of around there is normally when doctors start saying, like, yeah, this is pretty solid. So, I mean, 500,000, that's really solid. Yeah.
So, anyway, the idea was that, you know, the average life expectancy for a fast walking woman is 87.8 years, or 86 to 87.
Okay.
Give or take a smidge. Now, a slow walking woman was about 15 years less than that. So that's that's what, 71?
Yeah.
For a slow walking woman. Now, that it's discouraging because you, a fast walking man, your average life expectancy would be 85 to 86.
To be fair, 70 years is a good life.
Yeah.
If you can make it to 70, that's not bad.
Well, let me get there. You're going to be around 85 to 86 as a fast walking man.
Mm-hmm.
As me, as a slower walking man, I have a great expectancy of 65 to 66 average life expectancy. So I think I need to speed up.
Yeah.
That's clearly the takeaway here. And the reason why this is coming up on a gay show is because...
Yeah, I was going to say, we should mention
the gay factor.
Stereotype. Yeah,
the stereotype is that gay men walk incredibly fast. And you know what? Actually, when I'm walking to and from work, when I'm walking next to you and Jake, I'm slow. When I'm compared to just Joe Schmo on the street, I'm passing people. I've got places to be, you know, so maybe I'm not going to be at the 60-year mark. But the stereotype that gay men walk fast, I think it's a thing.
Let's be honest. The gremlins are going to get you long before you hit 60.
It's true. It's true. They'll get me and
I don't know why I keep thinking about gremlins. I rewatched Gremlins recently, and something that jumped out at me was there's that generally true stereotype about 80s movies, that 80s movies are really, really, really unkind in their depiction of women. And it's definitely true. Like, there's a couple famous movies like Deathstalker, which are horrible in their depiction of women. But TV moms and movie moms in the 80s kicked so much butt. In the Gremlins movie, when the mom walks into the kitchen and she sees a gremlin there, she doesn't even think twice. She grabs it by the neck and shoves it into a food processor. And she's just like, get out of my house! And it was so kick-ass. And the mom in Critters wasn't that bad either. Like the moment she saw the critter, she just kicked it right in the face. So, I mean, I'd like to tip my hat to movie moms in the 80s.
This week is brought to you by moms in the 80s.
Movie moms in the 80s.
Movie moms in the 80s. We're going to jump to our first song. This is by The Boy Band Project. The Boy Band Project is a cover band of all gay men, New York City based, all gay male boy band cover group. And they were recently featured in Quirky, which, as we all know, is a reputable news source.
That's between very large quotation marks.
Very large news quotes, quotation marks. But they created an original track called Get Behind My Love. And what I like about it is it's like if you took all of the boy band genre and distilled it into a generic boy band track.
Oh, yeah.
They
are not out there to make art. They are out there to blend in.
It is. It is. They have recreated the essential boy band sound.
Specifically the late 90s, early 2000s boy band sound.
Anyways, this is Let Us Know What You Think, Get Behind My Love by The Boy Band Project. And we'll be back.
All the things I need to say. I feel it coming on fast. I wanna live in the past. You know I need you, and my love is here to stay. Baby, let's start over. I'll give up the fight. Lady, let me love you. It'll be just right.
It'll be just right.
Girl, you know I know you, and my love's for real. So let me show. So scandalous, but you know another lover couldn't handle this vibe. Baby, I have changed.
Get behind my love.
We're gonna make a new start again, and we're never ever gonna be apart again. I love you. So watch me get behind my love. That love was compromised. Said the lie that I told, left you out in the cold. But it's over, cause my love is undisguised. Baby, let's start over. I'll give up the fight.
Give up the fight, girl.
Lady, let me love you. It'll be just right.
Be just right.
Girl, you know I know you, and my love's for real. So let me show. So scandalous, but you know another lover couldn't handle this vibe. Baby, I have changed.
Get behind my love.
We're gonna make a new start again, and we're never ever gonna be apart again. I love you.
You know my love.
So watch me get behind my love.
Hey girl, I know I've been tearing up your heart, but before you say bye bye bye, give me just one night. It's all or nothing, baby. I'ma quit playing games with your heart so that you can get behind my love.
Get behind.
Boy band project. I know my love was so scandalous, but you know another lover couldn't handle this. But baby, I have changed.
Get behind my love.
We're gonna make a new start again, and we're never ever gonna be apart again. I love you.
I love you.
So watch me get behind my love. I know my love is so scandalous.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And what an awful lot has been going on. We were talking about fast walking earlier. Now, the United Conservative Party in Alberta has revealed that they have no immediate plans to continue the working group that was established by the NDP. Now, in Alberta, there was the big election.
Right.
The NDP was out. The Conservatives are in.
That's a big shift in policy right there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, for Alberta, it was not much of a big shift. Yeah, the Conservatives were in control for donkey's years.
A million years.
Several eons of Conservative rule. And then I just think they they were kicked to the curb because there was a lot of the same, the same, the same, the same, no innovation. And many other reasons as well. The NDP was swept in, which shocked everybody, including the NDP. and one of the things that the NDP created was they were in Alberta in February, sort of before the election, was a working group looking at whether or not to ban LGBT conversion therapy.
Right.
Now, for our listeners, I actually would recommend they watch the movie that has Troye Sivan in it. Oh, my days. Boy Erased. There okay. we go. And it was it did the festival circuit round last year. It was sort of the one of the go-to for all of the LGBT film fests.
Mm-hmm.
It had Troye Sivan and some others in it. Nicole Kidman, I think.
Okay.
Was in it. I want to say Nicole Kidman. I might be wrong, though.
I'm not going to lie. Until about a month ago, I hated movies. I have recently rediscovered my love of movies, which is why I watched Gremlins and Critters. So, I mean, don't ask me about movies because it's all going to be like...
Gremlins and Critters.
I'm catching up. I'm catching up, yeah.
Anyway, Boy Erased is a great film.
Okay.
You know, it's like Prayers for Bobby. You're familiar with the film Prayers for Bobby?
I know the name. I don't know if I've seen it. Actually, I think I have.
Oh, my days. I swear to the listeners, I think it should be required reading for someone who wants to get a better understanding of the LGBT community. It tells the story about, I don't want to spoiler it too much, but essentially it's a narrative from the point of view of a mother whose son is gay.
Okay.
And that's sort of the perspective we see it through. It's sort of filmed in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's sort of the time and space. She sort of has to reckon with her faith. She has to reconcile her faith and the fact she has a gay son.
Is that the one with Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
Oh!
And Sigourney Weaver is amazing at it. Anyway,
Sigourney Weaver's amazing.
Within 30 minutes into the film, there's a major plot point, and I'm bawling my eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally every 10 to 15 minutes after that, it is a major tearjerker of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like... It's like the end of the movie where the dog dies. I forget the name of that one, but it's a Notebook or something. It's an ugly cry movie.
The Dog Who Stopped the War?
No.
Also known as La Guerre des Turcs?
There was a recent movie, dog died, everyone was upset.
Old Kids Yeller? Crying.
Funny sidebar. We went to go see the Pikachu Detective movie.
Why did you do that?
But even more so, we went on a Saturday midday, which is like literally the family film time.
Oh, yeah, never. Yeah.
All of the kids. And spoiler alert, Pikachu gets hurt. That's all I'm going to say.
Ooh.
And all of the kids started to cry. And I don't think I've ever witnessed something as hilarious.
Did Jake laugh out loud?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, Jake does not like small children, so.
But it was just really funny how they were all just like, oh my God. And it was... It's really something, for people who don't have kids, watching kids watch a movie is a hilarious experience.
I recently rewatched a movie that terrified me when I was a small child. And when I saw the scene that I remember terrifying
was
me
it
as
it?
An adult. No.
Okay.
No. It was a mediocre movie called Daryl about like a robot boy. And it was just at the end, he fell into a lake and then fell into a coma. And that just terrified me. And I was afraid of water for the longest time after.
That would do it.
You know, it's really amazing. You can watch a horror movie as a child and just shrug it off. And then you watch some movie and a guy like trips and falls up the stairs. And then you're like scarred for life. It's just children are really hard to predict.
That's so true.
But talking about Pikachu? No, we're talking about conversion therapy.
Yes, that was it. So Prayers for Bobby is a major sort of film in the sort of the gay movie repertoire. I think like Philadelphia.
Torch Song Trilogy.
Exactly, yeah. It's one of those must views for all LGBT people. And I think for straight people, I want to get a sense of a little bit of what it's like. I mean, it is a little bit of what it's like for people who are younger than, I would say, at this point, 20.
Right.
Because now the environment socially now is very different.
Completely different.
From even 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
But Prayers for Bobby, I literally cried the whole time. But Boy Erased is a really, it's a modern pick. It's also set in the sort of 90s, 2000s, early 2000s. And it's based on the real story. I think it's based on the memoirs of the guy who was His father was a preacher, and he was sent to conversion therapy, and he's sort of, he ended up writing a book about it, and he became quite a famous writer as a result of it. It's a really, really well-made movie, and I think...
And it wasn't a satire like But I'm a Cheerleader was.
No.
Yeah.
No, it is a really, really gritty take on conversion therapy. Mm-hmm. Now, the World Health Organization has debunked conversion therapy. It's more damaging than anything else. You know, all of the name a Canadian medical association that could be tangentially related to this topic, and they've debunked it. It's just...
There are a couple countries... I've heard of people saying that we need to be careful about how we ban conversion therapy, because if you're a psychologist and you advertise that you're going to, you're able to help LGBT people come to terms with being LGBT, you need to advertise it in a way quite often that sounds like you are a conversion therapist, even though really what you're doing is you're just helping people get to peace with it. But there's, you need to write that in a way that's welcoming to people who feel like they need to see a therapist. So there is that balancing point of like talking about it in a way that attracts the people who are looking for you, but you may accidentally sound like you're doing conversion therapy. And there was somebody in, I think it was in the UK, who got accused of doing conversion therapy, and they're like, no, 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 it's just the wording on the website. That's not what I'm here for. But it was just, it was an issue. So they started talking about how they're going to enforce it. But I mean, that's the back end. That's the bureaucracy side of it. And there is that issue of like, there are people out there who do specialize in helping people, but how do you talk about helping people in a way that is clearly distinguishable from people doing conversion therapy who quite often imitate people who are just there to help you? So, I mean, there's a lot of nuance involved on the enforcement side. So if you're talking about banning conversion therapy, which I'm all for, then you get into the weeds about how do you make that happen? And working groups like this, the one that they just canceled, would be something where you get a whole bunch of specialists in to talk about, you know, how do you identify the groups that do need to be shut down? Yeah. How can you tell the difference between, you know, the subtle use of language? How do you follow up and make sure they weren't lying to you?
The NDP group had advocates, it had academics, it had faith leaders. And I think the faith leader inclusion is incredibly important.
Oh, super important.
Previously on our show, we've talked about how, as someone who may be homosexual, reconciling your faith and your sexuality can be a major challenge.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, people...
Depending on the faith, it's no big deal at all.
Yeah. People find God and they lose faith. They can either gain faith or lose faith according to how, you know, how they walk that path. And it's really challenging. And anyways, if you want to get an idea of what conversion therapy is, watch Boy Erased. I think it's the easiest sort of gateway into it. Now, the health minister under the Conservative government has said that we oppose conversion therapy. What they're hoping is that the people in that group or the public at large will reach out to him about any suggestions.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're saying, oh, it's completely useless. You know, let's go and advertise it's happening. They're like, no, we oppose it. And they're just going about it differently from the NDP.
Yeah.
What this means, does this mean that it's being taken less seriously? The working group was going to come up with recommendations to change law in terms of banning it. Will the United Conservative Party follow that same path? We don't know. It's still too early to say. They have said that they're against it. You know, it's just a case of waiting to find out. Now, the city of Vancouver has banned conversion therapy in BC.
Okay.
So not only has the city of Vancouver banned it, but the Green Party in BC has also introduced a bill which aims to ban conversion therapy.
So, for all of BC?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Not just Vancouver.
Okay.
Now, the Greens will need to get the support of the other political parties to make that happen possible.
Yeah.
But we're starting to see it. And I think the movie Boy Erased has actually had a huge impact. I think it was Maine just became the 17th. Let me just have a look. I've got it here. No, I don't have it here. Maine became the 17th state to ban conversion therapy. And
okay.
It's sort of, there's been a slow domino effect across the states as more and more look to ban it. The federal government in Canada notably said a little while ago that they're not looking currently at banning it, but rather, and I quote, well, I don't quote, but I vaguely remember they said something to the tune of working with provincial partners on blah, blah, blah. You know, because it's a provincial issue, they said. They kind of kicked the can back to the provinces. So maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, okay, so this is all generally good news. There is progress. I mean, as I said, like, there is that issue of when you are banning conversion therapy to not accidentally sweep up into it programs and psychologists and therapists and religious leaders who are also there to support your way through coming out or coming to peace with it and things like that. Because there have been cases. And usually it gets cleaned up eventually where people get accused of being, I don't know, homophobic or something, or that they are engaging in conversion therapy. And then later on, you know, that when they're in front of court, they're like, no, there's just a phrasing issue where you're not understanding what we're trying to do, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So for me, it's more an issue of like, I think these are great laws to write, but I just really, really hope they get the wording right and ban conversion therapy in a way that doesn't accidentally sweep up people who are there to help. And it's fine to say, you know, I'm sure that if somebody does get nailed for conversion therapy and then their clients step forward and say, no, they're actually helping me. I mean, I don't know, like this is a very, very subtle thing. And I just really hope they do it right the first time around, because I would hate for good people to get accused and for the whole thing to get soured. But I mean, that's just me being cynical. But yeah, no, I mean, overall, obviously this is very good progress. And I look forward to absolutely everywhere in the entire planet being on the same page.
So the Canadian Medical Association, sorry, the Canadian Canadian Medical Association. Oh my gosh.
Because there's also the College of Physicians and Nurses.
Yeah.
No, Physicians and Surgeons, which is a different organization.
So the Canadian Medical Association says that it prohibits discrimination based on orientation,
mm-hmm.
and that they're sort of in line with the US in terms of attempting to change a sexual orientation is unethical, unscientific, and potentially harmful.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the crux of the issue, the reparative therapy, conversion therapy.
Yeah.
Those sort of therapies are just debunked.
Yes. Yes.
But it's still happening.
The best they can do is if you're bisexual and you want to get married to somebody the opposite sex and have a family, they can help you come to terms with who you are as a person already. Like that's as far as it goes. And there have been cases of people who are like, but I just like dudes so much. And like, yeah, but you also like ladies. So yeah. I mean, you can marry a dude and adopt, you can marry a lady and make, you know, babies, or, you know, how are you going to come to peace with all this?
Yeah.
But that's a different conversation. There's no conversion involved. It's more about coming to peace with who you are. You know,
what typically happens, and what's the case in this particular bill, the Green bill in the Green Party bill in BC, is that it's really targeted at banning the conversion therapy of youngsters, children.
Yes.
So it does not ban the conversion therapy for adults.
Consenting adults, it's usually like 25 and older or something like that. You can consent to some very interesting stuff if you're over 25.
The I think it's the legal adult age that they're using as the cutoff point. But they've also banned billing the health insurance, the provincial health insurance for it. So, you know, this like completely debunked science of changing the sexual orientation, the province of BC won't pay for. So
even if you're a consenting adult and you have insurance.
If you want to spend your own money on something that's been broadly scientifically proven to just not work, you know, you do you. I mean,
yeah, there's a... I'm starting to discover there's actually a long history of snake oil being banned. And for me, the big one that just blew my mind because I thought it was so hilarious was
the Emperor of China in the late 1800s banning acupuncture because there was zero evidence that it worked and that it was all made up. And it was, which is why it was practiced overseas. And in China, they look at that and they go, what about aspirin?
Dear.
You know, we have injections for that. We can just, like, give you chemotherapy. Like, it's, ugh. Anyway,
we're going to jump to our next song. This is a song by The Culture Club. Apparently, The Culture Club and, of course, Boy George may be getting their own biopic.
Ooh.
Apparently, the director who just did Rocket Man, which is the biopic of Elton John, is apparently musing on creating a Madonna biopic. Now it looks like Boy George is getting a biopic. I feel like we're going in, like, phases. Everything was a superhero, and they really dredged the barrels for superhero movies.
We are...
And now any Tom, Dick, and Harry who was slightly queer in the 80s...
There's a recording schedule over the next 15 years. We actually know exactly what movies are coming out when, and it's never going to end. It's just going to be...
But I mean, in terms of popular culture, but now we seem to be stuck in loads of biopic movies coming out.
Biopics, you know, of people Queen, that young John. People don't know who they are.
Yeah.
It's a lot of that. Yeah. A lot of that. And, you know, fine, because their story is kind of over. Like, you know, doing a biopic of Taylor Swift now at sort of not the peak of her game, but like, you know, 2 years after the peak, there's... The story is still ongoing, mm-hmm. so you need to wait until later in life. I'd like to see the biopic of Cher because there's going to be
there's a play about it. Bio play.
She's the first person to GOTY, and I can't remember what the I is, but you know the GOTY, right? Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Do you mean the EGOT?
EGOT, that's it.
Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. Yeah.
How did I put it backwards? Brain is weird. Anyway, yeah, she was the first to EGOT. She had like two variety shows, an animated series. Like it just goes on. Like you can't do a biopic of Cher without making it into a mini series. But yeah, my only question is it going to be about Boy George or is it going to be about the band? Because a lot of people complained about the Queen movie, but that's because in the director's mind, partly because the band signed contracts saying that it couldn't be made unless it was about the band and not about Freddie Mercury. Well, people were expecting a Freddie Mercury biopic, but it was about the band in the end.
Yeah. So they actually did one of the first interviews since the biopic got released, the Bohemian Rhapsody, the biopic about Queen. And they addressed some of the
accusations.
Yeah. And they said that they're like, yeah, we took, you know, they took some liberties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like revealing his HIV, you know, a couple of years before it actually was revealed. Yeah. And their argument was that it would have taken way more screen time to get to that point. So they just jumped it back in the timeline.
So it's not a biopic.
Somebody
then.
Had issues with the mustache when he didn't have a mustache and singing songs that he didn't sing until... I think the interview didn't touch on the queer erasure particularly well.
Yeah.
So there are still questions to be had. It looked like the two members of Queen who were interviewed about it sort of kicked the blame over to the film studios for these particular decisions. And what we've been hearing from some media coverage when it first came out was that Queen was the...
The surviving members of Queen, yeah.
Were the ones that... So who knows who was responsible?
If
it made nearly $1 billion, though.
If it's a movie about Queen and not specifically about Freddie Mercury, that's fine. But the story would look different if that were the case.
Yeah.
Because then Freddie Mercury would die about maybe halfway through the movie. And then they would go on and make another four albums.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. It's just a poorly planned out thing. But Culture Club, because Boy George, the band partly started because Boy George was dating the bassist or the drummer. I can't remember. But several members of the band were dating each other. And they broke up because the relationships ended.
Well, they've reformed.
They've reformed.
And they've released a new album.
Actually, we should just go to the song.
Absolutely. This is Boy George and the Culture Club with Runaway Train off the new album. I really like it.
Yes.
It's a great track, and we will be back just after this.
Running to Boston, hard on my sleeve. 200 bodies is all I need. These boys are home. Truth is, a runaway train flew down to LA, California, sun. So many people
truth is a runaway train. It's a runaway train. It's a runaway train. Truth is a runaway train. It's a runaway train.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And, well, I mean, Pride season truly is upon us.
Well, the early Pride season, anyway.
Well, no, I mean, for a lot of people, June is Pride Month.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of recognized sort of, you know, nationwide, even internationally, as June being Pride Month.
Yeah.
We saw in Edmonton, McEwen University added some rainbow crossroads, crosswalks at 109th Street and 104th Avenue. First of its kind in Edmonton, so that's pretty exciting, sort of in the run-up to Edmonton Pride there. We also, because we follow Fear to Canada Pride on the Book of Faces, we saw that they were talking about the Bay of Quinte, so that's sort of, well, it's in Belleville, but they kind of capture the whole of Prince Edward County, sort of the Renfrew County, that's closer to Ottawa.
That's Eastern sort of, Ontario, for those of you who are not at all in the area.
Yeah.
Basically,
people are just like thinking of the wine.
They have no idea.
There's a lot of wine. That's anyway, but it's like this
sort of Kingston area, but not near Kingston, really.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Try to describe it in a way that like somebody in like Alberta or Edmonton or something would be able to process.
If you're driving from Kingston to, no, you'd have to like, that doesn't make, it's like, it's oddly out of the way.
Everything is oddly out of the way because there's no direct path from Kingston to Ottawa. You have to loop out of your way no matter which way you go.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, unless you're in the canal, the more you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this. Fear to Canada Pride shared it because they have a Pride in the Park. It's at Zooks Park in Belleville. We talked last week about how much we enjoy little pride parks, park pride, sorry.
Yes.
And one of the things that they're doing, which I thought was super cute, was that they're having a pride pet pageant. So they, you know, if you get your pets all dressed up in flags and sort of engaging it, and it's corny.
It's going to be a puppy parade.
It's a puppy parade.
Yeah.
You know, whoever is the cutest corgi will probably win. You know, and a part of me is like, it's kind of...
Will it be the corgi?
I don't know.
Well, maybe the corgi.
Might be a corgi. People love corgis. They're weirdly expensive. They're just so expensive.
Well, they're I mean, just like most breeds of dog, they're wildly inbred, which is why they have bad hips. I would not mind getting a corgi, except for the fact that they have terrible health quite often.
Yeah.
That's aside. We're talking about Bay of Quinte here.
Yeah. But I don't know. What do you think of that as, like, you know, this, I think, really speaks to the charm of local prides.
Yes. Although they are feeding on the stereotype of lesbian couples with large outdoorsy dogs and gay couples with small yappy type dogs.
Yes.
Which is what you have right now, by the
way. I do have a small yappy type dog. Yeah, no, we're not bucking any stereotypes at my house. Yeah. Well, they're
pride. And every time I pet him, he farts on me.
Which is a weird thing, but there we go.
Nobody else, apparently, just me.
Just you. Yeah.
The moment I touch him, he starts farting.
I think you just trigger a reaction.
I don't know. But he's a small dog, so you get that. Small dogs are like that.
So Rainy River in rural Ontario also had their first pride. There was a number of places across Canada that had their first pride this year.
Yep.
And, you know, this astonishes me, because if we think back to last fall, let's say, I think it was around last fall, where we were talking about we were talking about the number of prides. Fierté Canada Pride released an infographic about how many prides they represent, and there's about 1,100 prides as of last fall across the world. About 110 of them are in Canada. Although that number now must be approaching 120, 130. It's pretty incredible.
Here's a thought for you. Do you think the number of small town prides is increasing because the number of large town pride protests is also increasing? And the reason why people in small towns and the reason why people in big towns go to prides are very different.
Well, I think we have to look at the history here.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of important for our listeners as well. You know, generally speaking, back in the day, if you were a gay person growing up in Gimli, not the dwarf, but the small town outside of Winnipeg.
Or Thunder Bay, Sault Ste. Marie, wherever
you are.
We're going to
stick with Gimli for the conversation purpose.
Okay.
So you're a homosexual growing up in Gimli. You know, there are not that many other openly homosexuals. You may be the only one. You could very well be the only gay in the village.
Yes.
But, you know, what are your options? Well, you can go to the big town, the big city, where there's going to be at least a couple of others.
Yeah.
So you would move to Winnipeg. If you're in BC, you would move to Vancouver. And gay people, disproportionately for a very, very long time, would move to metropolitans.
Yes.
Which is why metropolitans had a disproportionately large prides compared to the population.
Absolutely, yeah.
Except now, people are feeling far more comfortable in communities like Gimli, like Rainy River, to be able to have their own pride parades and sort of celebrate themselves. So now you don't have to go to Winnipeg to be gay if you're in Gimli.
And some people, like, this is something they discovered, what was it, about 3 months ago, I think they completed a survey in the United States about gay and lesbian. I think they focused on gay and lesbian because it's just easier to study gays and lesbians than it is bisexual and trans. I think they focused on gays and lesbians who live in the countryside, away from the cities. And they found that it was something like a seventh or something around there of the population of openly out people in the United States live in small towns. And when they asked them, you know, why do you live in a small town instead of a large city? They got the exact same answers as they got from anybody who prefers a small town over a large city. They grew up there. They're more comfortable with it. They don't like population density. They prefer living in the countryside. The kind of careers that they have are better in the countryside. All sorts of reasons. And people not feeling like they have to move to a large, crowded, stinky, overpopulated city where they can't afford somewhere with 2 acres where they can get their dogs to run around.
Yeah.
Like, there are people who prefer living in the countryside. Some of them are LGBT, and now they're feeling way more comfortable staying where they're comfortable. So, of course, you're going to get a lot more small town prides popping up, and some of them are going to serve whole areas. So, like, where my family's from in Quebec, in Abitibi, they're starting to get, I think it's Ville-Marie has a pride now, but it serves something bananas, like a plonk of land the size of Ireland is served by
one... Did you say a plonk of land?
I said a plonk of, okay, of land is what I said. Nope. And I don't know why, but that's the word that came out of my mouth. So, yes, a region of land about the same size as Ireland is being served by this tiny village of like 300,000 people, but like Western Quebec is huge. So like, you know, Ville-Marie is serving this entire region, but that entire region has a low population density anyway. Mm-hmm. So people are, they don't feel like they have to move to Montreal or Quebec City anymore. They can stay where they know the area, where they speak the local dialect.
Where they grew up.
Where they grew up, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is such a great thing. And honestly, I think this also speaks to why, back to your original question, why are rural community prides so different from the major metropolitan ones, Toronto, Montreal, yeah, Vancouver? You know,
I mean, there's different values. There's a different culture.
So not only that, I think that if you're looking at somewhere like Montreal or Vancouver or Toronto, mm-hmm, people moved there because it wasn't safe in small towns, such, not necessarily, but such as Gimli or Rainy River, you know, and they're going there because it's the odds of getting beaten up are lower. You know, there's, you can congregate and you know, it's just safer. And then when there's oppression on that, then you have critical mass and things like the riots, which became parades, mm-hmm, eventually, you know, and that's what it all comes out of. You know, I don't think the Pride Parade in Gimli started as a riot, but I do think the people who left Gimli because of the homophobic environment in the 60s, 70s, and 80s have been at a riot in Winnipeg.
Even if not from homophobia, because not every small town is homophobic.
No.
A lot of small towns, like if you've ever seen Letterkenny, I know a lot of people from small towns like the one they show.
You can see Letterkenny on Crave TV by Bell.
You can also see clips of it online.
Yeah.
Or if you do like people I don't know the names of who watch everything on shady websites, then you can watch whatever you want anytime you want. But anyway, they have this sort of small town attitude. One of the, because there's many kinds of small town, of like, yeah, they're a weirdo, but there are weirdos, so no one is allowed to pick on them because there are people. And like if you remember Liz, who I used to share an office with back when I was in my PhD, yeah, she was from a small town like that where, you know, there was no homophobia because that was our guy, and no one's allowed to pick on him except for us. And we're going to pick on him in a very specific way because we know him, mm-hmm, and we know how to grind his gears in a way. And it's not about him being gay. It's about like his ducks that keep humping his dog or something like that. It's going to be something specific to that individual. So small towns don't always have homophobia, but half the time it's just they don't know anybody and they want to actually like get a relationship, or, you know, they want to actually meet people. And that's harder in a small town. Mm-hmm. But you do get small town gay bars. They also exist. Kevin Smith, who's famous for doing Clerks and Mallrats and a whole bunch of comic book movies, he did a documentary on small town gay bars because he grew up in small town New York State. And he ended up falling in love with a whole bunch of small town gay bars because they're just so friendly. But if you're in a state like Alabama or North Carolina, where the legality of even being gay is gray, depending on who's in office at the time, small town gay bars end up getting a totally different feel to them. So actually, I would recommend that documentary for sure. I think it's actually even called Small Town Gay Bar by Kevin Smith. But yeah, the small town prides increasing in number, if anything else, just shows a huge shift in the culture of Canada, including in traditionally conservative environments.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, the conversation about, you know, people being gay, we've moved so far past that.
Oh, yes.
You know, in urban metropolitan areas, Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto, the conversation now is, you know, how can we deconstruct gender as a concept? And there's sort of many, many steps down this ladder.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing. And I am thrilled to see so many of them coming up. I feel like back in the day, mm-hmm, you could pride tour where they went all on the same day and you go to different places. I think now there are so many you can't all of them.
You got to pick and choose. You know, you go to, I mean, I still say one of the best prides I ever have been to was in Sarnia, which a lot of people are alarmed by that. But Sarnia and Blackwater, and I went to Sarnia Blackwater Pride. That was 2 weeks after I went to Hamilton Pride. And then Toronto Pride was 3 weeks after that. So, I mean, it's, you can really do the tour in the summer if you have the time and the money, unfortunately. Yeah. You need a wallet to be able to do this, but it can be done.
Well, and it can be quite cheap now.
Even on the cheap, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of communities are doing something. And actually, get to know your community. You know, maybe you moved out of town for school, or you moved out of town for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. If you're a gay person, go back, see what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And see how things have evolved.
And these days, prides are expanding to the point where if you are politically inclined, there'll be things for you. And if you're not politically inclined and you want to avoid that, there'll still be things for you. They're expanding in their scope and in what they're encompassing.
Well, there was a lot of stories we didn't get to today. The big one being that the World Health Organization has dropped being transgender from the list of illnesses. So that was a pretty big deal. And the debate on that is a little divided because, of course, often if it is listed, then you can access medical insurance.
Yeah.
So it's like, ooh, pros and cons.
Yeah.
But also, anyway, we really don't have time to get into it because we've run out of time.
That's a huge conversation. It is, yeah. But given today's boy band theme, when Luke was like, can you recommend any boy bands that are Canadian? To which I said, there is only one. So we're going to play out with Soul Decision, if you remember them, from the early 2000s. Ooh, It's Kind of Crazy, which was one of their three hits that they actually came out with.
I knew this one.
Yeah.
I was in the UK at this time, so it was... It crossed the pond.
No, apparently it did. Anyways, pretty good.
And we'll be back next week with hopefully clips of our interview or discussion with In Robo, In Rainbows, and Homo Ground, as well as hopefully some other great content. And we won't just keep talking about prides, even though it is the season.
It is the season.
And,
it is.
It comes up a lot. Anyways, I have been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. Thank you for listening.